Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. This is an important announcement for anyone thinking about advertising here on Everyone Loves Guitar. We've experienced incredible growth. We currently have over 82,000 monthly listens, and I would anticipate cracking six figures in the next few months. We've also grown our YouTube subscriber base by 72 times. During this time, we've kept our advertising rates consistent, but I wanted to let you know we'll be increasing these rates after the first of the new year. So if you're a business looking to generate new leads or increase your cash flow by adding new clients or customers, or if you're looking for general brand exposure, or if you're a label looking to promote new music and you want to lock into the current advertising rates before they go up at the end of this year, then listen closely. Fill in the short form at everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Even if you want to advertise next year, contact us now and you'll get to lock into the current rates before they go up at the end of this year. Thanks for listening. See you soon. If you want to buy or sell a home or investment property and you're here in the Tampa Bay area in Hillsborough, Pinellas, or Pasco counties, then listen up. West Florida Real Estate is a local residential real estate broker that's helped over 250 Bay Area homeowners buy and sell their properties in the last 4 years alone. If you're looking to sell, you'll want to get their free report, The 7 Biggest Mistakes Homeowners Make When Hiring a Realtor. And if you're looking to buy a property, you definitely want to get your hands on The 21 Most Expensive Mistakes Tampa Home Buyers Make When Buying a Home. Each one of these reports is going to save you time and money. Inside, you'll discover the 7 most important things to consider when hiring a realtor, what to do if you're buying and selling a home at the same time, and the danger of choosing a realtor who agrees with everything you say. To get your hands on these free reports, head on over to westfloridarealestate.com. That's westfloridarealestate.com. Hey, this is Craig. If you like this show and you want to support it and you want to keep it free, head on over to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/support. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. Man, I've got a really cool guest, extremely talented musician. He's one of these guys you listen and you see him play and it's like, why doesn't everybody know about this guy? He's a very talented musician, producer, composer, guitar player. This is the guy. I'm with Rex Paul Schinelli. He's out of Franklin, Tennessee, Nashville, basically. A couple of quick announcements. Number one, John Carroll, thank you very much for hooking Rex and I up. Number two, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe. You can subscribe to the show there, and you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel and check out all the you can watch us live on YouTube, which is scary. And also, enter your email address so you can get on my newsletter list so you and I can connect. And also, finally, Santana, Carlos Santana, and Joe Walsh. If any of you guys can get me to those guys, I'd really love to have them on my show. All right, Rex Paul Schinelli, awesome guitarist, vocalist, multi-instrumentalist, who as an artist has also released 4 albums. One of them has Eric Johnson, Dan Huff, and Phil Kagi on there, titled Hero Shuffle. Let me just tell you, I need to say nothing more. If Eric Johnson, Dan Huff are playing with this guy, he's a monster. Rex plays all the instruments and mixes, but he loves producing other players as well. And the other guys, they all trade off solos, which is great. He also co-released recently a progressive rock album with Phil Kagi himself titled Illumination. Again, Rex played all the instruments and shared lead vocals and guitar solos with Phil. He also co-wrote, produced, and mixed the album. Rex and his band Sacred Space also have a record ready to release that's going to come out in summer 2020. He'll be back on here to launch it. Eric Johnson, Phil Kagi, and Dan Huff again played on this one along with Rex's band, which is drummer David Birch and bass players Robert Wright and Sean Harrison. Any chance he's related to Bob Birch?
I don't know. I don't think so, though. I don't think so.
Rex has produced or played on over 3,000 demos, as well as on album tracks with John Bon Jovi and Alison Taylor, Tim McGraw, guitar legend Jerry Reed, Jim Brickman, Merle Haggard, Waylon Jennings, Brooks and Dunn, Olivia Newton-John, Randy Bachman, of course, from BTO, Jack Blades from Night Ranger and Damn Yankees, the Everly Brothers, and a host of other writers and performers. He also produced Songwriter Hall of Fame member and artist legend Bill Anderson's last four records, including his last album called Life, which had guest stars Willie Nelson, John Anderson, and Vince Gill. Man, you're like a who's who of... This is some serious name dropping here, dude.
No, it's like, be careful. Be careful, yeah.
On Bill Anderson's last album, Songwriters, which Rex also produced, Rex traded solos with Brad Paisley on If You Can't Make Money, Make Love. Again, I'm going to spell Rex's name out. You got to check this guy's playing out. He also produced, played, and mixed a long list of independent albums. His latest production for artist Jeff Coffey is on the Jetpack label group, is an album titled Origins, which is a collection of classic rock covers. Jeff sang and played bass for Chicago, of course, but he left to pursue a solo career a while back. On this project, Rex is a one-man band playing all instruments and singing background vocals on 10 songs, overdubbing on 5 and mixing the record. Dude, you're like, just bring you in and that's it. You need a songwriter in you to make an album, man. That's it. You play everything, yeah. You produce, you mix. That's
A blessing and a curse, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Mega producer and keyboardist Michael Omardian. How do you pronounce it? Omardian?
Okay. Michael Omardian. Yeah.
Drummer Tristan Bowden and guitarist Chris Rodriguez, who Chris was on this show years ago, and engineer producer Michael Latanzi, all team with Jeff and Rex on an additional 5 tracks as well. Dude, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate your time.
It's an honor to be with you.
Oh, thanks, man. The pleasure's mine.
Really? Seriously? Yeah, it's great.
All right. You are like an incredibly talented guy, not just as a player, but I mean, you play multi instruments, you produce, you mix, and you do all, and you sing, and you do all these things really well. I've watched videos of you doing all these things, and it's just like right away you can see, man, this is a really talented person. So my question is, what for you in your mind, what do you look at as your primary instrument, and how did you get good at it? Like, did you study on your own, a teacher? So let's start with that. What's your primary instrument? How'd you get good at it?
Primary instrument is guitar. Fell in love with guitar when I was like 6 years old. My grandmother bought me an M&E plastic guitar, and there was a record that I'd learned the solo and tuned the guitar to the notes. And then from then on, you know, Glenn Campbell record, it was Galveston. And so I tuned it. Oh man. So I got started well, but then it was just pretty much like any other guitar player, lifting the needle, dropping the needle, learning the solo, you know, and building your vocabulary from all your heroes, you know? And, I think, you know, probably my brother's 7 years older. So Hendrix and, you know, the Beatles were a big influence as a young guy. And then when I started to, I think my first rock concert was Bachman Turner Overdrive, 1974.
Oh, that they were awesome then. That was their.
Oh, yeah. So, and which leads back to actually getting together with Randy Bachman many years later. But
I'm going to ask you about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know you. I was like 10 or 11. And so that experience was like going, yeah, this is pretty cool. So bought those records, started learning those solos. And then when Boston hit about 1976, that for me was like, okay, my brain exploded. And so that kind of opened me to songwriting, melodic flow, and then the guitar playing, the details, the harmonies, the tremolo with pretty, you know, prodigious licks and that kind of thing. And of course, Van Halen and, you know, all that stuff. And I was fortunate enough to actually start my first band when I was 8th grade.
Wow.
And band called
14.
Yeah. Yeah. And so started writing songs right away, you know, so. And so I was self-taught, and I did take lessons from a lady in Johnson City named Boots Malden in Texas. and she was a sweetheart, and she had children that also played too. So I kind of took lessons from her son later on, but for the most part, it wasn't formal, didn't learn to read music or anything. But then it was just by ear. And after that, it's just, you know, devouring guitar music, you know? So
6 is really young. Was your family musical? Okay.
Well, my mom played an upright bass fiddle in a community orchestra, and
wow.
And she was the one that drove me to guitar lessons, and you know, she's an artsy person. And so she, you know, certainly give her credit for that pathway.
Yeah. Know, that's for great. Sure. That's really yeah. cool, man. Cause six is a very young age.
It is. Yeah. I could sing harmony when I was seven. So
did you really?
Yeah. It's just, I heard it, you know, musical. So
what prompted you to then pick up other instruments? Like you're just as proficient bass, drums. It's funny. There's a video of you like playing drums. Like, oh, I don't know if I could do this. And you just smoked it. Yeah. Man.
It was- oh, well, thanks, man. Well, it was out of necessity. You know, it's like, yeah. Playing in bands. And then when I started recording, hire the guys you can afford and to get the parts down to teach other people and say, you know, expand on this or whatever. And which I've done many, many times. And I love doing that first and foremost to show other people and get their performances. But sometimes when the inspiration hits and it's like, well, I kind of like what I did, you know, and it was just out of necessity to learn to play those instruments. So
that's a really cool thing, actually. Okay. You were writing songs at a really young age. What was your, that's not a natural thing. What was the drive inside you to do that?
You know, it just came immediately with the territory. I think if you ever form a band and you perform live, there's something in you that wants to play your, you know, write music or something. And so eighth grade, you know, my two buddies, we formed a rock band called Next Exit. And
great rock band name.
Yeah. And actually my drummer was on like a retreat and saw the sign and said, hey, that's our name. So, and so I had been playing guitar, but the other guys, Joe and Virgil, they started playing their instruments right away, like starting the band. So they, you know, that's like you too. They formed a band. I'm play drums, you play bass. And both those guys to today are playing rock bands and, you know,
you're still in touch with them. That's really cool.
Oh yeah. We did a concert. Like a reunion concert a few years back. And we're going to probably start doing more of that because we've got a pretty good following in Central Texas. And,
that's cool.
You know, the high school heroes and all that kind of stuff. We'll sell 1,000 tickets to a show. And, you know,
dude,
it's
that's
like,
pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It's fun.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
How did you get involved then in producing, mixing, and engineering?
Yeah. Obviously, technology's increased. So, you know, back then that was mid 70s to like 83. When I graduated high school in 83, I'd written some music and wanted to do some recording. And so I went to a studio in Austin, Texas, where I was going to school at the time, University of Texas, and recorded a 3-song demo. And I think I was using a Rockman back then. Remember those were like all the rage. But found a drummer friend of mine and kind of like Tom Schultz, you know, just started doing writing and put that stuff together, did everything else myself, bass and vocals. And that's when I fell in love with the process because it was immediate gratification and I had a kind of a knack for it. And it was immediate gratification paying off, like hearing these songs, going, man, that's actually a pretty good song. So, and then just started playing around the Austin, Texas area and writing more and more, learning the skill. And while I was going to University of Texas and even growing up, I grew up in a little small town close to Austin, going to see Eric Johnson, going to see, you know, Billy Gibbons and Stevie Ray Vaughan, who I met at Heart of Texas Music in 1983, I think, just happened to be in there, and learning from those guys. And Christopher Cross, believe it or not, was playing around the Austin area. And he's an amazing guitar player too.
Interesting.
And seeing that. Yeah, that fluid, melodic violin style of guitar, you know, that's what captured me. As long as when I was 11 years old, I heard Phil Kagi record. And that right then, and I saw him play live. And that was like, that guy makes the guitar sound like a violin. You know, I can't believe it. So that's captured my imagination, kind of lit the fires for that.
I guess you had to have also some inherent talent for all these things.
I do think perfect pitch, well, relatively perfect pitch. And then I think there's just, I've met children that have an automatic predisposition. They can sing you a harmony, yeah, you know, to a song at an early age, or they can improvise at an early age, and they can, you know, there's this kid at my church who's 10 years old, plays piano, and he can just sit and listen to chords and follow your chord changes. And it's just inherent, you know, some people, I think, just have that, you know, so I'm blessed. I've been able to, it's great therapy to have the musical gene, you know?
Oh, so. Man. Yeah. You know, I've never picked up my guitar and felt worse afterwards. You know, you always feel so much better, even if you weren't feeling bad and particularly badly, but you always, it's such a, it drains you of any negatives, and it just adds so much energy to your like spirit, kind of, you know?
Yeah. It kind of focuses the purity, and which crowds out the bad. And I work with a lot of, brain science behind the brain and what happens when you do music. In fact, there's a friend of mine that's a rock guy that does rock to recovery, and he goes in and they write a song with people that are in recovery. And when they engage that part of the brain, what happens in the brain is the therapists basically say the electrical pattern in the brain dances. Both, all the sides of the brain just start to function together with music. And it's actually a therapy that can help you in recovery and help you, you know, gain momentum to add a day and another day. It's amazing what music can do. So it's a universal language. It's a mysterious, beautiful thing.
Yeah, man, it really is. The other thing about music, the thing I got the most out of it, which changed my life, is when you, I've only been playing guitar 4 years.
I read that. Yeah.
When you have to be present when you're improvising. And I found that so freeing and so liberating. I was like, man, you know what? I need to do this in all the areas of my life.
Wow.
And it was almost like a switch was flipped. I just said, I'm not worrying about anything anymore. I'm just done. And it was like, and I took, you know, it sounds, it was kind of like I flipped the switch almost. And I'm conscious of it and I'm aware of it. So I, you know, and it's a really important thing for me to do because I feel so much lighter.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that's brilliant. That is great. That's an observation that really resonates with me. And I think Eric Johnson calls it getting out of your own way.
Yeah.
You know, you let the gifting fly without putting strings on it, you know, and it can free you in so many different ways.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was like a weight off my shoulders. Like, you know, you know, cause I'm always the kind of guy, you know, I'm tough on myself. I want to make sure this is right and that's right. And then, you know, you're thinking about a meeting you got to do next week or a conversation.
Right.
I just said, screw it, man. I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. I don't need, this is not helping me. And I really dig this feeling when I'm playing guitar. So I'm done.
Yeah.
And it was really, that's the greatest gift that I got from playing guitar.
Yeah. Man. That's great. I love that. Yeah.
Let's talk about, you've been success. I know all that you had some inherent knack for these things, but you've obviously worked your butt off. To excel at one thing is really hard. To excel at a number of things is exponentially more difficult. So my question is, what drives you? Like, what is you're super ambitious to, like, the sense I get out of you is that you're super ambitious, not to be ambitious because, like, look at all the shit I could do, but because it feels good that you've accomplished things and you're doing things you like and they're making you feel good. They're adding increasing value to others. You're making music, making other people feel good. You're doing some recovery stuff, which we'll talk about later, which is making other people feel good. So what are what is driving you, I guess? And is there like skill sets that you think you have that help you excel in multiple areas?
Yeah, I do. Every musician has a path and many paths that contribute to that. I think in my world, we all get the red light fever thing of, you know, somebody's hovering over you. And when you're in the heat of the moment, it's like, be brilliant now, you know, go. And you either do or you don't, you know, but the more you do that, you can tap into. And, you know, I played so many sessions with so many great musicians that, you know, you don't show up, you bring game, you know, you don't want to be embarrassed, which is kind of the ego thing, but then deadlines, you know, it's like, I remember being in sessions where we would do 12 songs in 3 hours,
wow.
You know, full tracking and solos songs. And not vocals. Yeah. 12 songs, like in 3 hours. And every session musician in Nashville will go, yeah, I've had plenty of those sessions, you know, where songwriters would come in and we'd do that and we'd listen to the demo tape. And then we'd look at the chart and we'd go in and track it, you know, one time through and maybe a second time if we didn't get it. And solos right on top. Next one, next one.
That's an album in 3 hours.
Yeah.
Now, what's the standard in Nashville? It's like 5 songs, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on, you know, how much money you have, how much time you have. And so songwriter demos are, you know, are really quick. And but a lot of times you get those demos and the energy that you get, you can't better them. So a lot of times the demos end up on records, which kind of happened with me several times or a couple of times, not a whole bunch. But so having a deadline, say, be brilliant now, and then everything you have to bring to that, I think like it's like an athlete. You know, you just kind of you learn to prepare, you know, pose, and then, like you just said, be present in the moment, and then learn what it means to be free and don't fear the freedom. And the more you do that, the more you kind of discover like, oh, wow, I can enjoy music for the sheer beauty of the music without being so focused on my solo or whatever. I can actually start listening to people and not playing, adding space and starting to be part of an ensemble, how you build a song, how you craft music. To me, that's where the energy flows. And so I just like being in that process. And like I said, you know, sessions and deadlines are your friend. Yeah. So,
and you also said something there, preparation.
Yeah.
And the, having that confidence that, hey, you know, I've done my work. That's really huge.
Yeah, it really is. And you have to learn to what I call get naked, get up on stage, take your clothes off. Here I am and risk it and blow it. But then the next time you don't, and maybe the next time you pull something off, you know, and if, because that kind of reveals that you're not so caught up in what you look like and what you think people think about you. You want to create music. And more than that, you want to communicate an emotion.
Yeah.
You want to tell a story. And when you can say, I don't care what you're wearing. I don't care what you look like, man. If you can tell a story, I want to hear it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what true lovers of music will do. They don't, you know,
absolutely
don't want music.
Absolutely. You know? They want to listen to the, you know, to the, it's funny because I was very late to the game to buy Apple Music because I'm not singles driven. Cause for when I listen to something, I want to hear the whole album. Cause I'm like, this band, guy, gal, I want to hear their story, and I'm willing to give it a whole lot. I know a song is not going to tell me their story.
Right.
Am I interested in having a relationship with this person? I can't tell that in song, but I can tell that in a whole album. And so I never bought, it was funny. I was really late to the game with that for that reason.
I kind of was too, you know, me too. So,
All right. Let's talk about, you've worked with a ton of artists. Talk about how you got the gig with them and then a cool or interesting story about working with them. And let's talk about one of my favorites, which is Randy Bachman. You saw them as your first concert. Then you're working with the guy.
Yeah.
How good must that have? Did you tell him, oh my God, you're the first concert I saw?
Oh, dude. Yeah. There's a story there too. But I have to preface all this by saying that I was signed to Sony ATV Publishing in Nashville. And when I lost that deal, basically they dropped us because we were a rock band and they weren't, you know, rock was not working in Nashville at the time, about 1992. I just started doing demos at the Sony studio and became kind of a part of the integral motor of doing all songwriter demos. Well, it just so happens that Sony ATV is all these writers, you know, they bought Randy Bachman's catalog. They bought Olivia Newton-John's catalog. They bought, you know, the Beatles, they had all the Beatles stuff. And so I've done a lot of projects where I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. Wow. And I was generating the work and accomplishing the test. So Randy Bachman was one of those. I don't know if you remember a few years, like mid 90s, when all the Ford commercials and motor commercials had "You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet."
Sure.
You know, I think that was about the time Sony bought his catalog and started licensing, you know, for Sync and stuff like that. So he came to Nashville, and he came in. I kind of ran Studio B at Sony. I was unemployed by Sony. I was an independent contractor, but they built Studio B around what I do. MIDI, you know, DA88s at first, and then Pro Tools 1994 first. And so I was just from 1993 to even up to as many as 5 years ago, I just lived at Sony doing demos and working with people and young writers. And I could tell you a story of all the, you know, from Dirk Bentley to, you know, all these writers that I was involved in early in their career. either doing the one man band thing or just doing a guitar or recording that stuff. So about that time, Randy came in, because, you know, he came to Nashville, just did the songwriting thing. So he came to the studio and needed to lay down two or three songs. And of course I had my acoustic and I would add some stuff to it in the solo. And he was with another songwriter. I don't remember at the time, but I told him, I said, Randy, you're going to, I hope this doesn't, you know, make you feel old, but in 1974, I went to your concert. You stayed in my hotel and you signed a dollar bill because I chased you. I chased you down in the lobby because I saw Bob Turner Overdrive. And he's like, oh man, I feel old. I go, don't, man, because your guitar playing. And if you know anything about those Bob Turner Overdrive records,
great,
the jazz, the tone, the, you know, how Randy, and then of course the Guess Who, obviously before yeah, that, but just, he's an amazing guitar player. Really, so that's what, you know, so I was just telling him. And so I was like, dude, you know, this is amazing. So got a chance to work with him a couple of days in the studio, and it was all demos. And again, this is, you know, the preface is I worked at Sony. So I've gotten to work with, you know, like Jack Blades from Night Ranger. He was one of those that was, you know, they bought catalog. And so Night Ranger was in town and he came and we did a demo in the studio. And then we all went to the show and he gave a bunch of tickets to a bunch of old curmudgeon, I don't want to say curmudgeon songwriters, but, you know, these country guys going to a Night Ranger show and they're going, you know, Sister Christian, what does that mean? You know, they're like, but they were getting it. The thing was, they were getting it. They were like going, I like this, you know, this kind of arena rock stuff, which they weren't, you know, I don't think really tapped into, and but they were then, because, you know, Damn Yankees and those great songs that Jack has always written as a great songwriter too.
He's
so
a great songwriter.
And of course, you know, Brad Gillis and Jeff Watson, my guitar hero, is part of them too. So
did you get to, get to meet Kelly Keegi?
Yeah. Yeah.
I had him on the show. What a nice guy he is, man.
Yeah. It was a real brief, really backstage, you know, but actually Jeff Watson, we kind of went back to the bus after their show and he played me a bunch of new music he was working on, gave me some CDs and we kind of kept in contact. Sweet guy and amazing guitar player. Of course, Brad Gillis, you know, he's amazing. He's, you know, those guys are transcendently good. So
yeah, I had Jeff on the show a while back. He's an interesting guy.
Yeah.
Out in California.
Yeah.
Eric Johnson.
Yeah, probably, you know, when that vinyl insert in Guitar Player magazine of Cliffs of Dover came out, it was like, okay, next level. My brain, you know, has been burned out because I just heard this. What is that? You know? And of course I knew who Eric was. I'd seen him in town, but I never really studied him that close. And then of course, obviously fell in love with his playing. So fast forward, I have a friend who's a guitar collector and who's also my employer in Austin at the time, who knows Eric, and he was my connection to meet Eric. So, I did a record in 2000 that was a kind of a contemporary Christian prog rock album. It's a pretty good record, called Prodigal. And he gave it to Eric, and Eric liked it. And so we went out to lunch, me and Gary and Eric. And I just asked Eric at the time, it's probably about 2002. I said, man, I would so love to write a song with you or maybe, you know, like collaborate with you. He's so sweet. Had never met me, but he had my record. So he goes, yeah, I'd like to, maybe we can do that. You know, fast forward, about 2005, doing this record Hero Shuffle. And I just go, man, Phil Keaggy, Dan Huff had already agreed to play on the record. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to call Eric's manager just to see if he would, you know, and contacted Gary, my friend, and said, hey, could you ask Eric? And by golly, he said, yeah. You know, he said, oh yeah. And so, I was living at Nashville at that time and I drove down to Austin. My brother lived close to Eric's studio in Austin, in Westlake area in Austin. And so I hung out 3 days in Eric's studio. In fact, I have a video of the process. It's called The Making of Hero Shuffle. You can find it on YouTube.
I saw it. It was great.
Yeah. And we were hanging out in the studio and it was just the sweetest time with Eric. And he played solos and, you know, and just contributed and was such a gentleman. And then obviously, the friendship that we created there and that he respected my playing, which was, I mean, that's like, you know, that's like Mozart giving you a thumbs up. I mean, well, that's so amazing.
Hear his influence in your playing, to be honest with you. You could hear
something. Yeah, and I you know, for a while I just kind of copied. Before Eric, I was Tom Schultz and Steve Lukather and, you know, Phil Keaggy, and then when I learned Eric, and then it was all Eric, and then it all kind of got dumped into a big, you know, a big pile. But it was just I remember being at a concert with a friend and we were playing I mean, Eric was playing, and I told the guy, I said, you know, there's going to be a moment in this concert where you will hear a violin floating in the air. Like, he'll do a run or something, and you'll just hear it. And I don't know if it was Eric's, he has this delay unit that does an out of phase thing that kind of makes a 3D delay or whatever. Or it just maybe, obviously, he's playing, but there was a moment when we were in the show, and there was this run that sounded like Jean-Luc Ponty. I mean, it was like all, you know, all the rosin on the bow, everything. And I remember I heard it, and there was my other two friends were in the crowd, and then we all locked eyes. We were in different places in the crowd. I go, there it is. And they all looked at me. I hear it. You know, those transcendent moments of those types of players where you just kind of go, I want to try to create a moment like that, you know? And so, you know, with Eric, that record, which is such a sweet gift that he gave me. And then even later, my record that's in the can, there's a song that's a song called Anthem that is a Leonard Cohen lyric, actually, oh, wow. Or song. And I did I created a different production and kind of a reimagined it. And Eric plays the solo on and some clean, amazing, amazing stuff. And it truly is because of his presence on it, but also because of Leonard Cohen's lyric. It's I'm so proud of it. In fact, you can find the video on YouTube. It's a song called Anthem. And it's a video that I shot, music video. And it's just, I'm so proud of that. So
there's also a video of you playing Cliffs of Dover.
Yeah.
It sounded great.
Yeah. Man. Oh, thanks, man. I, you know, it's every guitar player has to try at least once to do that song. And we do it in our show. We do Trademark. We do, you know, we do several others. If we have a slot when we can do some covers. And so, yeah, it's, you know, and I haven't really asked Eric what he thought about it. It's just an homage to him.
Yeah, sure.
And just taking those elements of, you know, his delivery and trying to create my own voice behind that delivery, calling all those things together. So yeah, love everything he does.
Cool everything. Story, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Now this guy, Dan Huff, if yeah. you are not hip to Dan Huff's playing, he's such a talented, and he's like you, he's a great player, producer. I mean, you know, he's kind of a jack of all trades and equally talented at all of them.
And you know, he was Billboard's Country Producer of the Year 3 years in a row. He's very successful, you know, Rascal Flatts, Keith Urban, I could give you a list of 100 artists that he, you know, Faith Hill, tons of people that he's produced. And if I told you the records he played on, from Michael Bolton to Madonna to Whitesnake to, I mean, just lists of amazing, amazing. He was one of those First Call LA cats with Luke Ether and Landau and all those guys. So, so Giant was one of my favorite bands, and I was living in Nashville at the time, and friend of mine was a guitar tech, and he couldn't make the last 5 shows, so he said, "Hey Rex, would you sub for me?" And I'm like, "Yeah."
And had you ever text before?
No, never texted before. But you know, I mean, if you're and you know, you make a living, you wear a lot of hats, and so I just showed up, said yes, sir, and you know, set up the amps and you know, changed the strings, and you know, even with Dan, I think he let me play his Bradshaw box, you know, switch the preset, so. But at the time, he had gotten his show so much to where it was just a volume knob thing for him. He was so good at all that stuff. So it took the last 5 shows, get to know Dan, and then he starts producing. And then about 2005, I was working in Nashville with an artist that was signed to his publishing company. Because at the time, Dan was obviously, you know, getting successful and had a publishing company. And so it was that writer's birthday. So Dan came over to the studio and we reconnected. He goes, "Hey, Rex, you know, this writer's name was Mark." He said, Mark tells me you're doing a record. He goes, "Let me play on your record."
Holy crap.
Yeah. So what do you say? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that same party, as it turns out, Mark was married to Phil Kagi's niece. So that night, as Dan and I were supposed to hold Mark at the studio until they got the party ready, then we all went over to the party, went to the party, and there's Phil Kagi and Bernadette, his wife, sitting at the table. So I walk over to the table and tell Phil the story. And I think Phil at the time goes, "Oh, that's amazing." And I said, I kind of asked Phil, "Would you like to play my record?" He goes, "I'd love to." And then he says, "In fact, next week, let's write. Let me come to town and let's write." So
holy man.
So from that party, I said, "All right, I'm calling Eric Johnson. that's where the call of Eric Johnson happened for that record. And Joe Priestnitz, his lawyer manager guy, you know, I had told, I've been told, you know, it's hard to get a call back. And I said, oh, I'm going to try. Left a message. Joe calls me back the next day. Says, yeah, I talked to Eric and, you know, he can't write or anything, but he said he could do an overdub. And I'm just like, no way. So the stars aligned and, you know, Hero Shuffle was born. And, so that was an amazing, amazing time. So Dan Huff, Eric Johnson, Phil Keaggy is almost like Hero Shuffle. It's like, here's my heroes. And they're playing on my record. I was the blind date, you know? So
this is such a good industry in that though. And I've experienced it from this show. If you work hard and if you do a good job, people are so supportive and so willing to like, oh, well, I heard you're a good guy from this person, so I'm totally cool to give you a shot. It's really a very unique, and you know, it's not like the business world. I mean, it is. I mean, I find in the business world, it's more, there's always like there, you might get opportunities, but there's always a sense of competition with everything, or, you know, are you doing better than me? I don't find that in music at all. It's just a very, you know, oh, you're good at what you do. Great. Let's do this together.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, being a spiritual guy, you know, music is such a gift that to me flows metaphorically from a throne of grace and love.
Yeah.
That if those people that embrace it do that, then they're actually going to be mentors and going to be radically other-centered with their gift. And that's what I found with Eric and Dan and Phil and, you know, the people that actually enjoy that you know, that burst of creativity and love, which actually kind of comes from a well, from a spring. You know, and the more you cultivate that, the more inside it flows within you. And so every one of those guys poured into me, and Phil to this day is, you know, we did a record together and we share so much time together just as brothers.
That's so cool. You can tell, I watched the videos where it was very, you know, both you guys were very, actually Phil was more comfortable and more relaxed than you, but now I'm getting to know you a little bit because I know you're like thinking about, I got to do this right. I know you're, your level of expectations of your performance in everything you do, but like Phil was like so relaxed and so chilled out. It was really comforting, you know, like,
That's a good word. That's a good way to describe it. But he's improvisationally, he is so good that he doesn't have to rehearse anything. I'm one of those guys. I got to rehearse what I do, you know, especially if you're playing with somebody
With Phil. That'd be like almost like pathetic if you don't rehearse. I mean, it's like, if you have any pride of ownership in your work, you can't show up naked.
And I'm trying to learn that from Phil, to let go and just play what you feel, be willing to fall on your face, but then the next time go, almost got it. I can get it next time, you know? So, he's,
well, that's good if he's opened the door like that with you. You should take advantage of that and do that, because if he's opened it like that, he'll be support. If you fall on your face, he'll be like, hey man, that's cool, you tried.
Yeah, he's already, we've had a lot of experience playing together, and which I've been blessed to have. And so, and we're continuing that. We both, you know, are committed to say, good things happen when we get together. So let's keep doing it. So,
that's awesome, man. I'm really happy.
It's awesome. I'm blessed. Thanks, man.
Bon Jovi. I didn't expect to see that. What's up with that?
Well, okay, so before the Sony gig, early in Nashville, I was playing with an artist, amazing female artist named Allison Taylor, great singer. And her management was new, actually part of, John Bon Jovi had a record label at the time called Jamco, and he had an artist named Billy Falcon on that record label, who's written amazing, amazing artist himself. And so one night Allison was playing a gig and she's, hey Rex, come play with me. I'm playing a gig at Third Coast. There's a bar and grill here. And she says, I think John's going to come. John who? John Bon Jovi. Wow. So we do the gig, and that night at the club, I just sit face to face with John Bon Jovi, and we talk about Bob Rock and production. And he tells some stories of being in the studio with Aerosmith when he was an intern at, you know, and we're just, I mean, I'm
was
just freaking.
Power Station. Was that his?
Yeah. Power Station. Right, yeah. Right. And so, such a, you know, John himself is a sweet, great Billy. Yeah. But then, so he and Allison wrote a song that night. And the next day they say, hey, we're going to record this song. Come to House of David studio. And so Allison got her band together me and Mark Dreyer and Steve Brewster and Don Kearse, I think, was the bass player. And oh gosh, amazing. I can't remember the keyboard player's name. He's sad that I can't remember his name, but and we recorded, and John was there. And so, you know, got to record a song that with John in the studio. He didn't play, but we were together. And so, I mean, I was completely Chris Farley, you know. Remember when you did Slippery Moon with that? That was awesome, you know, and falling all over myself. And so, but John was so gracious. And so that was just an experience that, again, taught me that good souls in music are worth, you know, investing, hanging around if you can, because they're just, you know, these are really great people. And the reason they have long careers is because they're great people. You know?
Yeah, I've noticed that. You know, there's very few assholes at the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
No, seriously, man.
You're right.
I mean, everybody's really nice. And I think that's part of, I think there's a misnomer of success in any endeavor. I think people think you got to be ruthless. Yeah. And while there are probably people like that, by and large, most people at the top of the food chain in any business are the nicer people.
I agree.
Yeah. And I agree. That's been my experience, whether it's in business or now in the music industry. Very nice, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jerry Reed. That must have been amazing. What an incredible player that guy was.
Yeah. I mean, just amazing. Of course, you know, I grew up knowing him as a player and then an actor, Smoking the Bandit, and then creating the music for Smoking the Bandit, which I was like, that's pretty hooky, you know? And then obviously tracing his guitar prowess when Chet Atkins would bring him in on the session and they would do the stuff together. So I was working with a writer named Buzz Kaysen in Nashville who had a publishing company. He wrote Soldier of Love, Beatles song, who got covered by, I think, Pearl Jam later. He's also written some amazing songs.
By Eddie Vedder.
So Buzz, and I was working on a record with, so Buzz was producing a record for Jerry. And Jerry, I think, had just had open heart surgery, but he still could play. So Buzz said, "Hey, Rex, you want to do a solo on a Jerry Reed song?" And I'm like going, "What?" You know? So went over to the studio at Creative, which was Buzz's studio, and Jerry showed me the riff, you know, and then he said, "Here," and then I played the riff, and he says, "Do a solo," and then he would direct me. He said, "No, man, do that, man, play that, you know, just slow down or whatever." And so I did, and it was like if you can imagine, an experience or whatever. And the whole time he was sitting behind me, like your granddad, grabbing my handles, of, you know, like pinching me, and like, "Oh, you know, I'm sorry, did I mess you up, Rex? You know, chill out, man." You know, laughing and sweetheart of a guy. And it's a song called Jesus Train. I think you can find it somewhere on the internet. And it's you know, Jerry had a spiritual experience where, you know, he came to faith in Jesus, and that's kind of what the song was about. And it's such a fun song. It's campy, but it's Jerry, and I got to play solo on it. So what can I say?
So it sounds like he was the kind of personality-wise, the character he always played.
He really was.
Yeah, that's
really cool. Was.
I've heard.
Yeah, he mellowed as he got older, but he was still really, you know, funny. You know, funny, amazing. You know, spur of the moment kind of guy. So,
do you know Dave Rowe?
I don't.
Bass player in Nashville. No, he had some good stories with Jerry. I think he was married to Jerry's daughter.
Oh, okay. Okay. So,
Vince Gill.
Yeah. So that record that I did with Bill Anderson, that had, John Anderson, Willie Nelson, Vince, Brad Paisley. And again, I mean, you know, dropping names is dangerous but it was really, you know, Bill knows those people. So he called these people, you know, to be on the record. And so obviously I would do the tracks, and Vince sang the vocal that Bill ended up translating into his style for a song that he did. And then Vince sang harmony on it, I think. And so didn't really do the guitar thing with Vince, but of course Vince is just a songwriter. I mean, just a superstar. And very, actually, through the years, him and Amy, I'll see him at, you know, Nashville Deli or something, or at a musical event or whatever. And they've always just been so, I knew Amy back when she going to church and would see her, you know, either lead worship or just say hello to her. And they've been so gracious. Like they knew who I was. They know my name. So they were like, hey, you know, shaking my hand. I go, thank you for saying, being nice. My name's Rex. And it's good to see you again or whatever. So he wouldn't, you know, I don't even know if he remembered that experience or whatever, but including Willie Nelson in that record, including John Anderson, oh my gosh, getting his vocal on a song.
Yeah, that'd be pretty intense. He's such a great, yeah, so iconic. That voice is really,
yeah, very, very iconic voice. Just, you know, amazing. And then, of course, the Brad Paisley moment where it's a song called Don't Make Love, or If You Can't Make Money, Make Love. And I did kind of a jazz guitar, you know, Chet Atkins solo, and then Brad did his chicken picking thing.
Yeah.
And we tracked it over at a studio that Brad uses. And so that was a great experience to get to meet those guys. And again, I don't have long working relationships with these people, but there was these moments where we did some substantial work. And so just meeting them. And interestingly enough, I gave Brad my Hero Shuffle record, and he gave it to another player that ended up calling me 2 years later and said, hey man, Brad gave me your record. You know, and just to have that happen, like Brad Paisley gave this guy my record, you know, and then he said, I love your guitar playing. And so just to have,
and you got some, like you said, got more work out. Did you get a call on that? Yeah.
Got a call. Yeah. And so just those little relationships. And of course I've been doing this for almost 30 years now, and been very fortunate to make a living doing music and everything here. So yeah, that's a rich payoffs for, you know, rubbing shoulders with these cats.
But you got to honor yourself too in that a little bit, as far as like, you gave the record out. You know, a lot of people be like, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to think like, but if you don't do it, if you do it out of humility, like, hey man, I'd love you to check out my record. I just made it. You know, it'd be, I'd love to hear if you have any thoughts on it, you know, or just, hey man, I just wanted to give you a copy of my record. If you get a chance to listen to it, enjoy it.
Right.
Without,
or give them the option. Give them the option. Say, you know, man, I'm such a fan of yours, and I've got this record, and if you don't mind, would you mind taking it? Maybe just listening to a cut and just let me know what you think, or whatever.
Yeah.
And usually, if you give them the option, oh sure, you know, even if they use it as a coaster later, whatever. But you know,
but if you don't ask, you're never going to get. That's what I always say, man. Don't afraid.
Ask.
That's why I've never been afraid to fail. I've been afraid to not do stuff because I know, okay, I'm going to be nervous. I'm going to be uncomfortable, whatever. But for a second.
Yeah.
You know, versus the potential long-term payoff of the answer, if you get a positive affirmation for whatever the situation is.
Yeah.
You know, I've always known if you don't do it, nothing will happen, and you're not going to have these opportunities every day. Man, you want a break for water or something?
No, I'm good. I just had pepper probably in my mouth. So.
But yeah, so give yourself some credit there too, that you created a lot of these things.
Yeah. And you know, like you said, sometimes you have to, like, I've been a germ, what I call a germ, went too far and presented myself too fast, but you've got to try to find the balance of what we talked about, like emotional intelligence, to say, no, it's worth kind of bridging this gap. I mean, you know, they were handing their demo tapes off at one time.
Of course.
You know, so they know. Everybody is. So So
everybody is. And again, when the guys are more successful, they're more likely to have empathy to somebody else doing the same and understanding, because, hey man, they know, hey, I was in that position one time, you know, and let me help out. So that's good. Yeah. Good for you, man. I'm glad this is all, how this is all worked out. In doing research and checking out your playing and your story, and I know, and you mentioned it too, there's a lot of faith based and faith influence in your music, and I assume in your life. If you're comfortable, where did that come from, and maybe what's your involvement in worship or in faith in general? Again, if you're comfortable sharing that.
Sure, yeah, and thank you for that. I mean, I appreciate, you know, the freedom to speak about that. Yeah, it's I grew up in a family that very much, and again, there's American evangelical Christianity, and there's different variances of stuff that's really not the gospel. I grew up in a family that really lived the gospel. I mean, my dad and my mom were loving, caring, you know, just giving people. My dad taught me the worth of there's a scripture that talks about kindness leads to repentance. You know, that if you're just kind to people and give them a space to own their mistake, but in love without coming down on them, then there actually leads them to growth. And so my dad modeled that for me, you know? And, so I grew up in the church and loved, you know, church music. And then Phil Kagi was a Christian musician and, you know, heard him at 11 years old. So that always resonated with me to be kind of the identity of who I am. So my first record deal was a contemporary Christian record called Prodigal, with a label called True Tunes. Dave Bunker was the head of the label that signed me. And, it was, you know, it's an expression of the person of Jesus and all of the benefits that he brings to his disciples and how that actually makes us better human beings and for the benefit of everyone in the city. And so I always own that, kind of, being radically other centered, you know, the way Jesus was, kind of a true disciple of Jesus. So it always was my core identity. And so this record, actually, interestingly enough, it was a progressive rock record. And it was the first record that Eric Johnson had heard that I did. And he liked it really a lot. And so he was intrigued. He's like, so you can do this kind of music in the Christian industry? I said, man, yeah, it's just about the testimony and whatever style you want, you know? And so that kind of started our relationship, actually, when we started having discussions and talking. So, yeah, and faith, it just became, you know, part of my identity. My soul needed a core that was incorruptible. And, I knew my need to be transformed into a better spiritual being, and I couldn't do it myself. And Jesus, to me, was the best example. And also, spiritual, but I believe he's alive and he lives in me and he creates and transforms me to be like that. And it just, I follow that as my core identity in everything that I do. And I find that he opens my eyes to see Jesus in everybody, to see the love, you know, the core essence of love and what he created, which is the supreme ethic of the universe, is love. And he just opens my eyes to see that in everybody. And when you can see that in everybody, your journey is going to be a lot more beautiful. So,
yeah.
And that's what, yeah, core of what I did. So,
few things. First of all, thank you for sharing. I appreciate it. That was very kind of you. A couple of questions. Is it possible to grow up anywhere in Texas in a small town and not have, like, everybody I've met in Texas who grew up in a small town is very faith-based. It's almost like,
yeah,
that's what it is. That's what you do.
Yeah. It is possible. I grew up with atheists. I grew up with, people who identified all different types.
Interesting.
And, it wasn't prevalent, but it was possible. You know, I think to grow up and counter against that took a strong personality to, you know, to kind of own that. But ultimately, through the years, as we grow older and mellow, we start to share kind of the thing that is the commonality of to me, of, you know, who God is, and, you know, to me, who Jesus is by what he would say is his Holy Spirit. And those are the resonances that, for some reason, every time we get together and talk, are the things that we grab a hold of and talk about and you know, dissect and take apart. And so it's been such a consistent part. I've got a friend who is an atheist, and I have another friend who is a Jewish friend of mine too. And we have a love fest when we get together. I mean, and it's such a great experience. And we even invite people into discussions about, you know, where do you find yourself resonating in this conversation? And, you know, how can we love each other? You know, I think there's a teacher, a gospel teacher friend of mine, who said, you know, Christianity is one of those things that really stresses how you treat people who disagree with you is the most important thing. How you love them, you actually elevate them and you celebrate their worth more than anything, especially if they disagree with you, as opposed to shake your fist at them and say you're wrong. So, really followed that a lot too, but you're right. You know, it is that cultural Christianity.
Yeah,
it's that southern,
much,
yeah. That southern religiosity.
Yeah, kind
that
of.
Ultimately, is ugly. It's not real, and so it has to be deconstructed. And that's what you're seeing in our culture right now, pulling apart the hatred, the bitterness, the judgmentalism, those things that people fear that if they don't, you know, if they don't have their security where they can control it, then they just have to react and throw stones, as opposed to, well, if you really believe what you believe, then you shouldn't fear anything. You should actually come into a conversation more open-minded. So,
well, especially to me as a guy who didn't grow up with any kind of religion or any kind of spirituality at all, listening to you and I'm hearing, man, if that's your viewpoint, as far as like, I'm trying to see the world through a loving eye and I'm trying to find mm-hmm. that in others. And if you're sincere about that, man, what? That's a real easy thing to.
Well, it's. I think it's just built into us as creatures.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, I love Jesus, and he would say, he said, "If you seek impurity, you're going to find."
Yeah, man.
He promises. He promises that.
You're going to whatever you're looking. Yeah, people that are looking to judge, they're going to always find something to judge. You know, man, it was really funny. This guy, I'm really lucky. I do not get a lot of trolls. And this guy on YouTube, he wrote this scathing, like such a hateful comment to me. And I was like, and I don't care because like, you know, and how you feel is none of my business. But I felt so bad for the guy. I almost mm-hmm. was going to say, listen, you know, sorry you didn't enjoy this, but man, I hope you get this anger shit worked out.
Right.
It was so, I was like, wow. Like, why would you invest that much in me? Like, to be honest with you,
if you
just turn a channel, man, but to actually write like an encyclopedia about how much you hate the interview. I was like, wow, man, I feel so bad for this dude.
I know. And that's true, you know, and that's maturity on your part to be able to say, man, I hope you can work through this, man, because it ain't about me. It's about whatever you're dealing with, man.
That was like, holy, you know? Man. I was like, man, even if everything you said about me is true, I'm not angry like you are. So I'm doing right. Okay, you know?
I don't have to make somebody bleed.
But I think that's really important. Right. And I appreciate what you said about that as far as just everything. I mean, you said, if you're looking for something to find, if you're looking for flaws, we've all got them. You're going to find them. And if you don't find them, if you don't see them, you're going to create them. If that's what you're looking for, you know?
Yeah. So, Thank you, man. Thanks to you. Thank you. And even when we first met, you know, there was an undercurrent of, share your heart, which I love, you know, I love that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this sounds selfish, but I'm looking for that in these interviews. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to learn, and I'm looking to feel something the same way I am when I listen to music. You know, I'm looking to learn and I'm looking to feel something. So to talk with the person that's making that, you know, what you talk about a blessing for me. Like, how cool is that? I was talking to somebody yesterday. Who was I talking to? Yes. Oh, a young, very successful musician out in California. He was naming a couple of guys. Oh, yeah, I had them on my show. He goes, it's so cool. You have a reason to talk to all these guys. And I'm like, it's like very cool if I'm honest with you. Yeah. Cause I could you know, and it's like Warren Haynes is coming on my show. He's a guy I've grown. I mean, I'm like almost giddy about that, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. What a player and everything. Just musician. Yeah. Yeah.
So talented. And you could just, he's got to be such a quality human being to put that consistency out, you know? So I think it's much better. I guess my thanks to you is I think it's much better when you're trying to find the positives in the world and in yourself. I think just things are much easier in life.
Yeah. I mean, there's a line that Leonard Cohen wrote, great Jewish poet that he is, in Anthem. He says the chorus, ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. I'm like,
man, I just got goosebumps, dude. That was awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to listen to that track on YouTube.
Yeah. Anthem. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Seriously, man, I got goosebumps here.
I love
Thank
that.
You.
Leonard can do that to you.
I have a very old Leonard Cohen record that I bought in the Village. I grew up in New York City. If I bought in the Village, I can mm-hmm. see the cover. I haven't listened to it in years. I need to put it back on, man.
Yeah. It's
great.
Yeah. He is.
Tell me about, what do you think top three experiences musically for you?
Okay. Man, I've got to say Eric Johnston let me into his world and, you know, affirming me as a guitar player, musician, and then contributing such an amazing guitar solo, solos, you know, on the stuff that I do, and letting me into his conversation and world, even resonating with songwriting and lyrics. And, you know, I'd love to be able to write with him sometime. When we did Anthem, you know, I remember he called me, I was sitting in my chair and I'd send him the tracks cause he'd agreed to do it. And I was sitting there in my phone ring, Eric Johnston. I said, Eric. And he goes, Rex, he goes, man, I got these tracks. He goes, I love this song. He goes, tell me the story of this song. And so I just got a chance to share that with him. And you know, he was excited to play on it, which was, you know, a really cool thing. So that was probably Eric. That's awesome. Phil Keaggy, obviously that musically, you know, seeing him at 11, being a fan, and then playing with him and now writing with him and doing a record with him. And that's, and then now he's my mentor.
Man, I'm so happy Dan, for you. That's a that's so cool.
Oh, I'm so blessed. And Dan Huff too, but friendship with that. And then I had an experience, lots of musicians that are my heroes that I got a chance to play with at Sony when I was doing demos. When the Everly Brothers came in, mm-hmm. I was like, wow, okay. So we worked in the studio a couple of days, and I think it was a Bill Anderson co-write with him. I think that's or a Tom Douglas co-write on that too. I've had some experiences where I worked with this artist who Gretchen Peters, amazing artist. She's out of Nashville. She writes a lot with Brian Adams. Hmm. And so I did a couple of tracks that, you know, Brian Adams was on the phone going, man, I love what you're doing. And just little things like that, that would be, you know, just, you don't deserve that. But when they do happen, it's like, thank you, Lord. Thank you for this opportunity. You know, so those probably are the three experiences musically that just made me just go, okay, I've had a good life. You know, I want more, but if it ended the day, I'm good. You know, yeah, so
that's really nice. Yeah. Thank you. What kind of work did your folks do?
My dad was a salesman. He sold granite, mausoleum and grave markers, and kind of created that whole industry. In my hometown, there's a big geodesic dome of granite, and it's called Sunset Red. Beautiful color, black mica, silver mica, red granite. The capital is made out of it in Austin, Texas. Okay. Made out of this granite. And so my dad started about 1954 and worked for Granite Mountain, which was a company, and he just started creating his sales routes around Texas and you know, for 50 years sold granite. And wow. Interesting. Remember those conventions, you know, going to convention of grave marker makers, you know, cemetery owners that would show those grave markers in their showroom, you know, but it was just beautiful, beautiful people, you know. And then my mom, is an artist, you know, but she's, needlepoint quilts, you know, kind of does all that type of artistic work, you know, painting on fabric, had a store where she did a lot of that stuff. Before that, she was got her beauty license and was a beautician. Just colorful. You know?
So they're both go-getters.
Yeah. Very,
one creative driven. And one.
Yeah. But one creative, one kind of real, business, but tenderhearted and not, you know, ruthless. They were just easy people, you know. Nice. My dad was just so free with, you know, not being uptight about lean times. You know, he just had this freedom about him that I think I inherited.
That's cool.
And I'm so blessed. I had a great, great childhood.
And you had you said older brother?
Yeah, 7-year old brother who very kind. In fact, he's a financial planner. You talk about your history.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah. And he's actually worked, you know, in Austin area. He worked with Robert Rodriguez, the filmmaker, for a long time.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, helped early when building the studios and invested in, you know, all the stuff and helped them. And then he's worked with various other people And so, and he was an athlete, got a track scholarship to Rice.
Holy smokes. That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. Yeah. He won state pole vault when he was a junior, 14 feet or 14.6. I can't remember which one it was. And then when he was a senior, went in the 200 meters and got a track scholarship to Rice. And so, and then all his music, obviously 7 years older.
Yeah.
You know, I had an old soul just because my brother listened to this great music, you know. So
that's really cool, man.
Yeah.
What were some of the low points or dark periods that you've had to go through, and how'd you get through them?
Yeah. Well, most recently, my wife struggled with a pain condition, a chronic pain condition, and several surgeries. So I basically kind of had to remove myself from the session world and work from home to be a caregiver for her. And just seeing her suffer and not being able to, you know, pray to God, say, do it to me, don't do it to her, yeah. You know, but have to do that. So that has been the gut wrenching journey, and she's better now. So that's all kind of a journey, but it really does, you know, there's a crack in everything. And so, but that's how the light gets in. And then burying my dad, you know, he passed away in 1998.
Sorry,
man. Yeah. Dropped out of a heart attack, you know, kind of a thing, but hey, if you're going to go, you know,
yeah, it's not, you know, prolonged. It's not, yeah.
I understand. Yeah, and we didn't have to make the decision to for extended, you know, all that stuff that, you know, you do, but it still makes it hard.
Oh my God.
And you know, so yeah, those have got to be, you know, darker moments. And then losing friends to suicide, drug overdoses, family, you know, my church family especially, my church has a counseling program with a psychiatrist or psychologist on staff. So we deal with we jump into the brokenness, you know, and, you know, sometimes you just have to be okay with things not being okay.
Yeah.
And still be present, what you talked about. So there's been some moments there too, but in the midst of that is where grace flows. So I, you know, it's a beautiful thing. Well, it's as dark as it is.
Thanks for sharing that. I'm really glad your wife's okay. And I just want to mention congratulations. You said you've been together 31 years with her?
Yeah, be 31 in January.
Congratulations. Dude. That is like awesome. Very cool.
It ain't because of me. It's because of grace. So
I feel you on that.
Yeah, there you go, brother. There you go.
Is there anything, Rex, if you could go back and give your younger self advice, is there anything that you might have told yourself, assuming you would have listened, that made your life either easier or less stressful, or business, personal, anything?
Yeah, a couple of things. I think one of them, if I would have understood, is to build boundaries for better self-care. Because I'm a people pleaser, and I'm a performer, and I work so hard to be liked, and that can take its toll. It can taint your creativity, everything, make you inauthentic, you know, make you pose. So, that, and I think the other thing is that, I'm a loving person, but I had the unrealistic expectation of reciprocity. I wanted it back.
Yeah.
And if I didn't get it back, I felt wounded and, you know, entitled or whatever. And, you know, I think to be gentle as a dove, but shrewd as a serpent is, you know, kind of a good way to, you know, don't expect, but when it happens, it's beautiful, but as far as it's up to you, love, just,
sure. It's, you know, funny you say that. I always have expectations about how people, I used to have expectations about how people behave, like simple, for me, it's like common courtesy things like return a phone call, return an email, just be honest.
Yeah.
And my buddy always used to say, my friend, Chris Chico, great friend of mine, I've known him for years. He said, Craig, you know what? Your problem is you put expectations on people that they're like you. And I'm not that I'm so good, but they're just have to be my expectations. So sure. I understand what you're saying with that, because then because to you, it's like, man, this is common sense. Well, not to that person.
Right.
You know, and I got no right when it comes down to it.
Right.
And you know what helped me with that actually is having three kids. Cause I learned not to have expectations of them. Not that they're like disappointed me, but like, they're not me.
Yeah.
And you learn early on, like, how come they're not doing this? And then you think of your, man, when I was a kid, you know, I had to walk up and I had to walk uphill both ways to go to school, and you got to, so
right,
you know, but I got no right to have those expectations. Yeah. And that, and right, my friend Chris told me, it really made a big difference, because you do get frustrated. You're like, man, because to you, the way you were raised, everybody's loving, you're caring, you're compassionate, and everybody sees, gives that back to you. Not necessarily.
It's a
painful sometimes or frustrating lesson to learn.
Right. I mean, you know, you find your self-worth and sometimes in what, you don't like me, and you realize, boy, what a horrible slavery to put yourself into. Yeah, right. Try to be liked, you know? So,
no, yeah. And that's a very common thing in
it is.
Music with creatives and performers, because your whole, am I liked, that determines your success.
That's right.
You know, and so it's a very hard, and I talk to a lot of people, that's a, you know, better self-care. You put it really well. People don't necessarily use it like that, but better boundaries and better self-care is very important, man.
You know? Very much, yeah.
Thank you, man. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, you're so, you're a good guy to talk to. I really appreciate you.
Thanks, man.
Let's talk about gear.
Okay.
You're really an incredible player, man. What?
Thanks.
Guitar wise, what's your number one, your go to, and what other guitars round out your top three or four?
Yeah, well, I can kind of, I'll give you kind of a convoluted way. I Les Paul, I love the tone of Les Paul. Then when Eric Johnson played the Strat, I go, wow, you can make a Strat sound like that. So then I, you know, I got a Strat, but, and I've got an Eric Johnson Strat that he kind of picked out for me, and I bought, you know, from him because I, you know, I wanted an Eric Johnson Strat when it came out. And, so that's special. Came through Gary, his friend, but you know, he picked out the allotment, I think, when it was like 10 guitars for people that wanted them. So, but interestingly enough, a lot of my music has got open tuning changes, acoustic changes, you know, amp guitar changes that happen between verses and choruses. So a few years back, my wife bought me a Variax, one of the first Variaxes.
Okay.
And I customized it, put a Wardmouth neck on it, kind of made it more playable. And then when the new Variaxes and, of course, the pods and how that works together, and you can have presets that are completely different guitars, I've actually got this hot-rodded Variax that's my main guitar, because it also, it'll work direct too. It'll work like just as a regular guitar. But it'll do all these various instruments and, you know, from hollow bodies to whatever. Put a better pickup on it, you know, did network on it. And
is that the blue one?
No, it's actually.
Oh, you got it right there?
Let me see if I've got it.
Because I saw you playing a blue.
Yeah, it's right here. It's kind of got, you know, it's got, I got a humbucker in there with it, and it's got, you know, I put some cosmetic work on it because it looked like a bad Japanese horror movie, the way they did their design. And then I did the headstock a little bit more, and then I did some fret work on it. And then I've actually got, and I'm not going to tell people this, but I have two Variax engines where I can do like a 6-string acoustic and a 12-string acoustic with two different motors and wire this to where, and I don't use it very often, but when I've had a couple songs that have this special guitar layer thing. And, one of the videos you can watch on YouTube is a song called Come to Me that we shot in a live concert. It's the same, there's also a video of, I cover Sting's If I Ever Lose My Faith, and same guitar, but this other song has got open tuning, 12 string acoustic, and you can see kind of everything the Variax can do.
That's really
cool. And I programmed what's the software program that does, beat people use it. It's only programming music can do, video, light changes, and preset changes. So we had half of our show, we fly, you know, in sequence stuff or whatever. And so all my program changes were done by the software. So I didn't have to step on pedals. So that's, I could amazing. Be walking out, doing an acoustic thing and do a solo, and it's all automatically. Plus I'm singing too. So it's all kind of have to have on. A lot of, yeah, as a trio, as a power trio. So, did that, and you can watch that video and see how that works. But that's kind of why, out of necessity, obviously the real thing sounds better. But when you're in a show like that, you can't bring 12 guitars and change in the middle of a song.
How are you going to change them in the middle of a song? Yeah,
that's right. And so I've actually maximized that to be able to get it. And then I use it on sessions too, because it really does sound periodically I'll just go, man, that does sound like a Gretsch. That does sound like a Les Paul. That does sound like a 12 string. Or I'll combine them with the real thing, you know, and use them both. And so.
What kind of humbuckers in there? I love the way you put it in. It fits really nice, man. You must.
Yeah, it's a Shawbucker. Okay. It's it's got a resonant peak a little bit lower, so it's warmer. But somehow it's got an output that works, you know. And so when you back down the volume, it cleans up really nice. But when you pull up the volume, it gets a little darker, that's but great. Still bites. So, yeah, it's hard to find, you know, you just kind of for pickups, there's really no science. You just got to try it. See what sounds good in the guitar. Yeah. You know, so, yeah.
That's cool, yeah. man. Do you happen to know Greg Martin?
No.
Kentucky Headhunters? Mm-hmm. All right. Never mind.
Yeah. Know who he is, but I don't know him, you know, so.
Okay, so the Variax pretty much does everything for you.
Right. But, I mean, I've got a bunch of guitars that I use. You know, I mean, Tellys. I got Les Paul. I got a 12-string Takamine. I've got a 27 3/4-inch scale baritone acoustic.
Oh, wow.
I have the same thing in electric, a Strat that's a 27.5-inch Strat baritone. I've got a warmest Strat that I built myself. I've got the EJ Strat. I've got... a Tele, you know, deluxe. I've got, you know, stuff that you need, you know, and I use them all, you know, especially in the studio. So
any interesting stories about how you acquired any of them besides the EJ?
Yeah, the EJ was great. One guitar, the best acoustic guitar I've ever heard, is a J200. Mm-hmm. There was a guy named Jim Colella who was the head of Epiphone. Oh gosh, it's been several years, maybe 12 years ago or so. And I told him I wanted an acoustic guitar. So he brought home a bunch of acoustic songwriters, you know, Hummingbirds or whatever. This J200 was a guitar that was gifted to my church as just a, you know, gift. And he had taken it on the road to do a tour with Trial of Paris, I think. And while it was on the road, he got stepped on. The top got stepped on, cracked. So it was given to Joe Glazer, world-famous Joe Glazer,
yeah, I know Joe.
Repair guy here in town. And he repaired the top. And after he repaired and braced the top, he said, this is the best sounding J200 I've ever heard. Because it got rid of the boom, but had all the mid-range and still had a good bottom into it. So Jim's got these 10 guitars lined up, you know, and I'll go over to his house. And I've known Jim, he's a sweetheart of a guy, play all of them. But I kept coming out to J200 going, man, this one's just, you know. And he goes, let me bless you with that guitar. So he gave it to me.
Wow.
And it was just like, what? That never happens to me, you know. But it did. And awesome. So I've even rented that guitar. A friend of mine who's a producer in Nashville heard me record with it. And he says, if I can't hire you, can I at least hire your guitar if I need it? So that guitar is on a lot of, I think, Brooks and Dunn records or I can't remember, Mavericks or something. It's Don Cook, a friend of mine who actually liked that guitar. And then he got one. He got a J200 too. But there's another producer that actually heard it and actually, you know, $50 for the session. Yeah, use it or whatever. So, yeah,
that's cool, man.
It's free if you use me, you know. But
yeah, there you go. Comes with the yeah. player,
right?
Very cool. Give me your top Desert Island discs, top three. Okay.
Oh man, you know that's so hard.
Just for now. I mean, not. I mean,
Sting, Ten Summoner's Tales. That record in every way is just songwriting, production, delivery. Forever Lose My Faith, you know. 7 Days. That record still, I just listen to and just love. Boston, first one. So many things on that record. Songwriting, Brad Depp's vocals, you know, the way Tom Scholz just hit it out of the park on everything on that. Yeah, and was a big inspiration for why I do the one-man band thing, because he did it. Avi Musicom.
Yeah.
Eric Johnson's record. There's a song on there called Trademark. And there's just that solo and everything about that song is just transcendent, you know. There's these emotional visual images that just blow into my mind when I hear how he plays some of that stuff. And it's just healing. It's a healing experience when I hear that record.
That's cool.
So, and I told him that face to face. I just go, Eric, you know, I remember he played a gig and he made a couple mistakes, you know, but then he would recover and I go, Eric, dude, you know, he was kind of bummed. You know, I said, dude, what we live for is to see a guy trip down the stairs and then how he recovers Because then you get angry and then you pull off something really amazing after you maybe, you know, blow something. I go, what you did after that is like, you know, completely transcendent. I said, I just love the fact that you were, you know, you were free enough to do that. And there's a couple, you know, the Yes 9125 record.
That's a great record.
You know, it's just production, songs, everything. So probably, and then the Illumination record I did with Fokeggy, believe it or not, just because there's things that happened that were so much more than the sum of the parts. So
it's interesting. You're playing, if you just took Boston and the Avia Music Comp, I could hear a lot of those things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, well, because especially the tone of your guitar as it relates to is very, you do a lot of things that are like Tom Scholz-like.
Thanks, man.
Yeah,
thanks.
It's interesting that you picked those because when you said them, I'm like, yep. Because, I mean, I didn't listen to 100 songs, but I listened to, sure, you know, 10.
Enough.
You know,
wow.
And it was like, wow, okay, I could see that, man.
Yeah. Tom Scholz was one that I vibrato study. His vibrato and then the phrasing. A good example is there's a song called Hitch a Ride.
Yeah.
And at the very end of the solo, he's doing there's this big bend up and he does the harmonies with the bend, but the harmonies happen a fraction of a second later than the tonic. And it just adds this transcendent in a canyon angels singing harmony, but one's a little bit later, but it's perfect because it's this energy that just lands on this thing. And then of course, More Than a Feeling, when he goes up with a harmony three part and that kind of liquid vibrato, that's just perfectly timed. And, you know, I was like, I never heard that before, that type of vibrato that was just so emotional. And yet technique was so, you know, elevated. So that was a big inspiration.
I'm going to go back and listen to that record today. And, you know, one thing I do remember, even as a kid, listening to that, the mastering and the engineering for that time period, I remember listening to that thing on an LP, of course. Wow, this is so clear.
Yeah.
I mean, it was extraordinary, even for back then, you know. So the guy was really had it together.
Yeah.
Rex, tell me, most important things you've learned about yourself?
Probably, and this just goes back to my faith. And it you know, I can understand if people don't resonate with this too. I certainly, you know, but just my need for Jesus, my need for to transform what's broken in me, that crack, and the need of the light to shine through. And that to me is my core, my true, where I run. You know, I tell my Sunday school class and people I preach to, I said, look, of anything else, of anything I've ever said, one thing I don't want you to let go, run to Jesus, run to Jesus, run to Jesus. No matter what you do, how you screw up or where you are, that is the core, because it will bring life and it will bring healing. So that's what I've learned.
Thank you, man. Good for you. I was thinking about your comment, if that doesn't resonate with people, but I don't know that anything, like, you know, it's going to resonate with some people, other people maybe understand it, and other people aren't gonna. But the same thing with the top Desert Island Discs.
And the freedom to express that, and
you
know, the beautiful thing, like in our discussion as we speak, you know, because you sound like you have a heart of love and sharing. My healing is in you. Well, listen though, my healing is in you. Your healing is in me, and we share this, and it happens in a way that wouldn't happen by ourselves.
Right.
And so, to me, that's just the essence of the beauty of humanity: is we can come together and glean beauty from each other. So, you know.
Well, and you know, it's interesting for me. This show has really helped me open up, because I am not that guy.
Wow.
I am not, like, to my wife.
Sure. Yeah. That's to the people who really know you. Yeah.
But I'm not that guy, but I have, it's been so, what's the word? You know, it's something I've wanted to do. It's like, it's like really feels good. And it's like, and you can't connect unless you do that.
That's true. I agree. I read your story, you know, in your bio. And then you talk about how crazy doing this thing is. It's not like you were done, but it's almost like you were willing to risk that because your soul was ready to grow.
Yeah, yeah.
But well, also blossom. You know?
Yeah.
So man, I kudos for trusting and jumping. Yeah. You know, well, because I really do think, yeah.
It was a point where I had a whole bunch of stuff happen, as I said in that bio in 2009, and I said, man, I've got to trust the universe more. I can't do this shit solo. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So no, I mean, it was overwhelming when I had all these things happening.
Dude, that's the story of my life. Yeah.
It was like, man, I can't. I'm done. I need some help.
Yeah.
And so I was sitting here literally playing that white Strat, and I heard a voice that said, "Man, you need to go interview guitar players." And I'm like, "I'm not the dude that hears voices, man. You know, I'm
from
the Bronx. Yeah. We don't hear voices there." I was like, "Okay." I said, if I got to trust the universe, I got to, that's an action word, right? Like, if I'm hearing this voice, I'm not like hearing voices often, you know? And I'm like, what's the downside?
Right.
Like, if it doesn't, I don't know why I'm supposed to do this, but let me do it and I'll figure it out or I won't.
Right.
But, yeah. But I was like, okay, I'm listening. So.
Yeah. I mean, wisdom is vindicated by her children, and you just look at what you've done through your 600 interviews, you know, and it's bearing fruit. So it's like, yeah, man, keep going.
Yeah. And it's been great experience. And, you know, I don't, I'm not a guy that's like really have a big ego or anything, but someone said to me like, Craig, you know, look at the people you've had on your show. You don't work for a magazine. You don't, you don't have like, it's not like you're from the music business. You're not even a good guitar player. Like, but I never thought about that when I just said, well, if I just do this, you know, it'll work out because if I do a good job, I wasn't worried.
Yeah.
About, you know, like, you know, so anyway, but it's been weird. Best childhood memory.
I thought about this, and of course I don't want to lessen anything, but we have a patio in our backyard. It's made out of the granite that my dad sold, you know, and we've got this tabletop that's about 8 foot or 10 foot in diameter and about 4 inches thick.
Wow.
So it's, you know, 1,000 pounds. I remember when we built it in getting it off the truck or whatever, but we used to have barbecues in our backyard, And so even when I moved to Austin, I would bring, you know, friends, college friends, church friends, and we would come and my dad would barbecue.
That's so cool.
Or if it was just the family on a Sunday, you know, it's nice weather. And, you know, it was just a time when we could hang outside and be with my parents. You know, I realized a lot of weekends as a high school kid, I didn't want to go party. I want to hang out with my folks.
That's great.
You know, such a square. But of course I did. I was a rebel and did all that stuff. But that thing to where it's like, that has beauty. And I'm so glad I experienced that. So that was just a peaceful time when, you know, and I think that's pretty much what heaven's going to be, is just an endless backyard barbecue. We're just going to hang out and don't have to be rushed. And we can have these conversations and drink a little new wine in the new kingdom and say, look, everything's fixed. The light's shining. So anyway.
Backyard barbecue is very cool.
Yeah.
Most exciting experience or best thing that's ever happened to you?
When I kissed my wife.
Whoa. There you go.
1989. And we had been dating. We had known each other through church and friends for years. And I was actually engaged to another girl who's a beautiful, amazing girl. But, it, you know, I just had to break that engagement off because it wasn't the right one. And, and my wife was a friend. And so when that happened, it was almost like, wow. And we had a friendship. And she's so cool because she knows who Dan Huff was.
That is weird.
You know, a girl, and she's guitar. She knows guitar, and she loves Eric Johnson.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. So that by itself, and she's gorgeous. But I was nervous. You know, like, is she going to let me? Is it going to blow our friendship or whatever? And then it did.
That's cool, man. Yep.
And it changed everything. Cool.
And here you are, 31 years later.
That's right.
That's awesome, man. Nice to hear that. Yep. Thank you. Most important thing your dad taught you?
Oh gosh. I think what I said a while ago, it's kindness that leads to repentance. So if you want to repair relationships or anything, or just build a relationship, the kinder you are, the more apt that person is to have a soft place to land and give you a soft place to land and build bridges if there's ever anything that happens. So, you know, just kindness. Kindness is the path.
Too.
It does. It does. And it costs.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really does. You have to absorb a lot of, you know, a lot of pain if you're going to go there. So
how about your mom? Most important thing she taught you?
The arts, and creativity and, kind of, and how to laugh, you know? Yeah.
Do you have any hobbies outside of music?
Yeah. I'm a Renaissance person. I love, I fixed up my house to sell about 2.5 years ago and put a new hardwood floor in and painted the walls and,
oh wow,
you know, new windows in a couple of places. And just, I've always kind of liked to do that kind of stuff and learn how to do that kind of stuff. I like to paint. Art is really, but I haven't really jumped into that a whole bunch. The album covers, like the Phil Kagi Illumination album cover, I did all that.
Oh, did you?
Graphics work. Yeah. Cool. All my videos. Your videos are great, man.
I edited
all those myself.
That's a lot of brutal work, man.
Oh, dude. Yeah. You know,
editing is, it is not easy.
Yeah.
People,
yeah.
Creating is much easier than editing. That's what people don't understand.
It's yeah. That's why they get the medium books.
Yeah. That's great, man.
Yeah. Oh, and another one thing too, is just, teaching about Jesus. I'm a Bible teacher and I love setting people's hearts on fire with the real Jesus, and not the Americanized evangelical version, but the real one. So
let me ask you this. You do recovery stuff. Do you want to talk about mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. I've known so many people, in my life. I was an elder at my church, so people would come in and want to talk about sexual addiction, drug addiction, you know, all kinds of things. And getting to know rock star therapists in those fields, people that do, you know, sexual addiction recovery, drug addiction, alcohol addiction recovery, and now the brain science of neurofeedback and brain imaging to help bring people to a place to where, you know, where you store trauma and when it's healed and where it goes. And when you do a brain scan, you can actually tell where it is and you can assign treatment. And to actually see people walk in recovery and some of the science with the drug and alcohol addiction, we now know that, you know, for the first year, there's going to be a 90% reticence. You're going to fall off the wagon.
Yeah.
There is no, you know, one and done, although that can't happen. But if you can get past that first year, the connection between the hypothalamus and, you know, the parts of the brain that weren't firing because of the addiction, they start to fire. And then that whole reticence turns around and then it goes 90-10, you know,
interesting.
And so long-term care and expecting, you know, and building parameters and, you know, giving people dignity in the process, but also telling them, look, you know, okay, you acted out, get right back on the train, you know, better is, you know, total cold turkey getting better and less is still good. It's still, just because it's not cold turkey, you're still getting better. So to give people hope and they get to the point where they can just start adding days of, but most of what that is it's not really drinking. It's what you're drinking at.
Oh yeah.
It's what you're trying to medicate at. Right. So if you can find that trauma, then, you know, then you can repair. And that's where the connection makes. And that's where the exponential healing can happen. It's where, like, going, that's what I've been trying to do. You know, I've been drinking at my relationship with blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
And when you can actually, and then how can you find a healthy way to meet that need and try the healthy way? And then once you do, and then community is the key.
Yeah.
Just surrounding yourself with people that, you know, can walk with you too. So, you know, all of that stuff, which, so here I go again with my whole Christianese thing. That's kind of the church. That's what it should be. That's the way it's meant to act, function, is to restore, you know, bring health, you know, for the good of the city, for, you know, health of all these places. And so most of my friends live in that place as well. So, and because they're all in recovery, or they're giving recovery to people. So.
Do you integrate any like 12 step principles with that?
Or? Yeah. Yeah, very much so. You know, the 12 steps are a big part of helping you put a pattern that gives you a healthy path of self care and recovery.
Yeah.
But even there, it can be a little dogmatic and legalistic if you let it.
Mm-hmm.
So to make sure that you have systems and people And you can, you right size your desires. You know, you take that addiction that becomes so big and you just make it a thing. Well, of course I want this, this, and this, but it's an inordinate desire. I need to realign that, and surrounding yourself with people that can support that. And it takes courage. The most courageous thing that I've ever seen is this: have somebody pick up a phone and say, I need help. I'm like, dude, you know how brave that is?
Oh, I know. That's tough.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a thing to do, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's good that you're doing that, man. Thank you. I think a lot of people benefit from that. A lot of people need it. We have so many, you know, of course, a lot of people come on the show to talk about getting sober. And then we have so many people. I had so many listeners telling me how helpful that was. I made, you know, we have a YouTube playlist now that's just on sobriety, and it's pretty popular. Yeah, because I'm a big supporter of that, man.
Yeah.
Two more questions, and I cannot thank you enough for your time.
Oh, man.
Toughest decision you've had to make, or most difficult thing you had to do?
Probably, I got to say, there's three things that compete for that. One was breaking off that engagement with that girl, because it was, you know, it's like beautiful, perfect person, but I just don't feel it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's hard to be honest about.
Yeah, that is hard.
Second thing was burying my dad, you know? And then the third thing I think is some interventions that have had to happen where, you know, you have to build a barrier and say, you know what, if you don't, this is it, you know, I'm going to walk away. And so those have been hardest moments that have really tested the metal.
Thank you. And last question, Rex. Biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years, and how much of that change has been intentional and how much is just a natural, you know, part of aging?
Yeah. I can tell you the way I would describe it is it's happened to me. But I was an intentional when I recognized it and got into the momentum of it. But, you know, discipline is a great and beneficial thing, but it won't change your heart. The heart has to be changed from the inside out. And then when you combine that with affinity for discipline so that you can be a better person, that's where the magic happens. You know, it's discipline just to get some things you want to get, or discipline just to, you know, prove, not bad, but it's not the ultimate end. It's when discipline joins in with a transformation of heart that makes you radically other-centered, loving, healing. And to be able for me to say, my biggest joy is to make other people successful. I'm like, no, it's not. I want to be a star. I want to be successful. But ultimately it's like, no, I actually love producing records for people. And, you know, yeah, I put my name on it. It's cool. You know?
Right.
And I'm just surprised. I am a selfish, egotistical person a lot of times, but when I find joy in that, I go, something in me is changing.
That's cool, man.
It's happening to me, you know? So.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Thank you so much for sharing everything, man. You're a lovely guy, and I really appreciate you sharing your story. I want to tell people where they can connect with you and find you online. First of all, it's Rex Paul Schnelli. I'm going to spell his name. Rex Paul, P-A-U-L, of course, Schnelli, S-C-H-N-E-L-L-E. And check out his record, Hero Shuffle. It's the one with Phil Keaggy, Eric Johnson, and Dan Huff on there. He's got another record out called Surfing in a Hurricane. And are those both on? And actually, go to his website, okay, which is Rex Music, rexmusic.us, and you can find all these things. Also, the new record, Illumination, with Phil Keaggy. Are you guys going to like play some shows and tour on that? Or?
Yeah, we probably not many. My relationship with Phil is he's been doing this for 50 years. And if it makes sense and fits in, you know, I want to help him find a place to where he doesn't have to be a road dog.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of my friendship with him. I mean, I would love it. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But
do you want to tour with Phil Keaggy? No. right.
I bet we'll do some shows. I think
you probably do some shows locally.
Yeah. We'll see how that develops and see if there's any need for that. I've had some people contact me and said, man, you guys do this? And I said, well, put it together.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, I certainly hope so. Jetpack Records.
Yes.
Talk about that. You're getting involved with them to the extent you can talk about it.
It's an artist venture. A friend of mine started it, and guy wrote a book called Hacking Music and All of the New Music Economy and the ways we're going to have to find those new monetary channels and distribution and stuff. He's got it down. Whether it works, we'll wait and see, because everybody's waiting to see. But we have an artist that I just produced, a guy named Jeff Coffey, who's the bass player and singer for Chicago. Mm-hmm. The name of the record is Origins, and it's just a bunch of classic rock remakes and reimaginations. Triumph's Magic Power, you know, I won't even go into it because I'm not supposed to, but, you know, Foreigner, Queen, Journey, Rod Stewart, Paul McCartney, a lot of cool remakes on the record, and they sound amazing. Great players. I did 10 songs as a one man band where I did everything, and then the other five were
amazing.
Done with.
That you're a one man band on all this shit. This is like,
like I said, it's a blessing and a curse. You know, I can get it done quickly, but then there's also five songs on there that have, Michael O'Mardian, mm-hmm. producer, you know, multi-Grammy winner for Christopher Cross and a lot of other people, plus an amazing piano player and multi-instrumentalist himself. Tris Embiden on drums, it's funny, we redid a song, a Kenny Loggins song. I won't give you the title because I don't want to give it away, but Tris and Michael played on the original.
Right. And so Chris plays with Kenny now. Chris Rodriguez is out.
Yeah, Chris Rodriguez did. Yeah, but Tris, the drummer, played on the original.
That's wild.
Yeah, and so then Michael O'Mardian, you know, and Tris actually retired from Chicago, I think after 25 years with him, at the same time that Jeff Coffey, the bass player, singer, artist that I'm producing, retired from Chicago after like 3 years or whatever. They retired at the same time. So it was great to have them back together in the studio. And we were at Michael Attanzi's Latitude South. He's such a great producer himself and engineer. And so just shout out to Latitude. Man, love you, Michael. Such a treat. And then, of course, Michael O'Mardian. Come on.
Yeah.
Michael O'Mardian, Sailing, Ride Like the Wind, that piano, and then all the stuff with just tons of, you know, people he's worked with. And so he was a joy. What a joy. So, and of course, Chris, what a monster.
Yeah, he's
Chris.
Great player, great voice. Great voice. Yeah. And also, if you are interested in having Rex work with you as a producer, what I would suggest you do is also Instagram Rex Tunes. You can follow Rex on Instagram at Rex Tunes. If you're interested in working with Rex as a producer, this is what I would suggest. Go to rexmusic.us, check out some of the stuff he's done. You know, if you dig the vibe and if you think that you guys would have some chemistry, he has a contact tab there. Email him, you know, be specific. Tell them what you've done, what you're looking for. Be as specific. Pretend it's like you're looking for a date almost, you know, be as specific as possible. Well, I mean, so that you can make decision as to,
that's good.
Yeah, this exactly. makes sense or not, you know, so,
that's
you,
right.
you know, if someone says, hey man, I like your stuff, I'd like you to produce me. How do you respond to that?
Yeah. All you of
know?
The above. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. But it, you know, so be specific. Yeah. We've done this. We're looking at doing this. Here's a link to our music, you know, whatever, but, right. He'd be a great right. guy to work with. So go to rexmusic.us and go from there. Anything I left out, man, or anything I forgot?
I think that's it, man. Jetpack is going to be launching. I'm kind of going to have a formal relationship with them. So Jetpack offers us a host of services, from somebody releasing a record and just wants a little help with social media, to people that, you know, want to release a full blown record and it makes sense for everybody. I'm an A&R guy for them starting tomorrow. So, that's going to be great. We're going to announce that, do a press release. So, even hook you up with services that may help you as an artist get a little more exposure. I'd like to explore maybe working with some of my heroes like Eric and Phil and Dan, and see if they would want to, you know, contribute or be a part of this too. And it looks promising. It's exciting. So again, if you're somebody looking for, you know, a producer, and a lot of the stuff I produce, and you'll have to find like artists that I produced to see, but, just having a discussion to say, where do you want to go? How do you want to get there? You know, that might be a good thing for us to do. I love those kind of discussions.
Awesome. So good. Also, check out Jetpack Records. And if anything that they are offering seems like something you might want to avail yourself of, do the same thing. Go to rexmusic.us and contact Rex and then put it together and go from there. Cool. Brother, thank you so much, man. You're a good guy.
Craig, it's been a thrill. Thanks, man. Likewise. I love that Les Paul hanging on your wall behind you too, man.
Thank you, man. I always say if I had like 1/100th of a percent of everybody's talent that I talked to, I'd be a good guitar player.
Oh, man. What if somebody told you that that's actually what's happening as you do this?
I would say prove it.
Yeah, right. Well,
the proof is in the playing, right?
10,000 hours, right?
There you go, man. Hey, hang on 1 second. We're out. Thank you very much for everything, man. I really appreciate your time, and I wish you the best. Thanks, and I look forward to meeting you in person sometime.
Man, you too. It's been a thrill. Thanks, man.
Likewise. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. If you enjoyed what you heard, share it on your social media channels. Tell all your friends about it. Thanks very much to Rex Paul Schnelli for his time. Please check out Rex's music at rexmusic.us. Instagram, Rex Tunes. Hero Shuffles, the last record with Phil Kagi, Eric Johnson, and Dan Huff. Surfing in a Hurricane was a record before that. The new record coming out next year. He'll be on here launching it. Illuminations with Phil Kagi. There's some great stuff on there. Check him out on YouTube.
Thanks, man.
For sure. And Jetpack Records. And there you go. Just send him checks, man. There you go. And don't forget, most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. Thanks for listening, and I'm out. Thank you, Rex.
Yeah.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.